Thank you. I hope you enjoyed the opulence of the lunch break surroundings. I certainly was wowed by the rooms. I would like to first of all thank the ACE Consortium and SKS for inviting Oxford University Press to this open access event. And I can see that TB is fully pro-Oxford open access. Our colour for open access is orange, and look at his tie. Perfect match. So my name is Yuli Tamajo. I work at the sales department of the electronic databases and journals at Oxford University Press, and I have been at Oxford for 15 years, so I have seen the development. What I would like to talk to you today is basically Oxford University Press take on open access, and I will explain to you what we do in open access, how do we get involved, and how we see ourselves in that environment. So what is open access? It is actually difficult to give a precise definition of that, but as you can imagine, there is one. And the definition that Oxford is using is, well, open access is a free and unrestricted online access to and free and unrestricted reuse of material, usually in scholarly journals. This definition is mainly based on the gold access options. So, what are the further definitions? Of course, what is gold open access? What is green open access? What is hybrid journal? And what is a fully open access journal? And here are the four main models that Oxford University Press is involved with. The two at the top, the gold and green, are actually in a rectangle because they are actually relating not to a journal, but to an article. This is actually a way in which you can publish an article. And then the two bottom parts, fully open access and hybrid, mean the two ways in which your article ends up being in a journal. So, I'll start with the gold. So, we are thinking that gold, what gold means, it means making a paper or the article freely available online, immediately on publisher's website, and published under a license which grants reuse rights to users. Often this involves payment of APCs, which are the article processing charges. Why I say here that often involves payment of the article processing charges is because sometimes these are free, and later on I will explain to you how this works from Oxford. So coming to the green open access publishing, this is actually a very, very large area that various non-governmental organizations, as well as publishers, ministries are treating this particular model differently. But in our views, this is an author's deposit, a version of the manuscript in their institutional repository or any other website. So the green access does not involve the APC charges, but authors deposit the version of the article on the chosen website or university website, but there is also an embargo period. So the final manuscript that would be the accepted manuscript, for example, from Oxford, will be then only published on our site. And here, no reuse rights for copying of the article apply. And of course, within the repositories of individual institutions or individual universities and libraries, we are not sure how then the rights are used. Maybe they allow other institutions and users to reuse it. However, this is something that has not been explored by us. So, fully open access. So we are coming now here to not just an article, but the content, meaning a series of article. So fully open access consists of a lot of gold published articles. And all content is open access and made immediately available. Authors usually pay APCs. With regards to the hybrid way of publishing, what it means is that hybrid open access journals provide gold open access only for articles for which the authors or the author's institution or funder pay the APCs. So this will be a combination of articles available via subscription and published in the gold open access. Okay, with the publishing of the articles, either in gold or green, of course, there are some licenses that we need to consider. So this is the sort of a round two that we always have to consider. The main NGO that provides the licenses is the Creative Commons. And some of you who publish or are involved with publishing in open access possibly already know a number of these licenses. So, what does this license allow, meaning CC BY? And then the CC, just to explain to those who have not seen this before, CC stands for Creative Commons, and BY is actually not an abbreviation of the letter B and Y, but actually stands for by meaning, let's say, this article has been written by Julita Maggio. So I will tell you in a minute of what does this license allow, CC BY and C, and then the third most commonly used one is the CC BY NC and D. Okay. I'm sure you all have a headache already with the open access, but these are the three most common licenses that are considered by authors when looking at open access. And all of these licenses and the clauses can be, of course, seen on the Creative Commons website. So, and here are the simple explanations for them. So, the first one is Creative Commons Attribution License. This license gives the most permission for reuse of an article. So the article can be copied, parts of this article can be reused in other works, and it gives the freedom to the user to reuse it in the way that they want to do that. The second license, Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License, restricts the use of the article content or its extract in commercial use. Then the last license is actually the most restrictive. The Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. It is mainly used in humanities, and this license carries a lot of restrictions. That, for example, only the whole article can be used, parts of it cannot be reused, and so on. So there is a lot of decisions that needs to be made by authors when they actually decide to take on open access and decide to publish within a particular license. So round three, what are the drivers? What are the main drivers of open access? So why would anyone want to actually publish in open access, knowing that there are all those licenses and possibly APCs and other difficulties that come with open access? Well, there is a lot of drivers that push us to it. It could be that an author has to be compliant with the funder policies, so they may have to publish under the contract with the university or through the funding body. They want to actually have a greater dissemination, and they think that through an open access article, this article will be more cited. So it comes to the citations that go through the Thomson Reuters impact factors. Although, actually, no proof has been made that open access increases the citations. We have actually not seen any data on that. Our understanding is that a good content, good study, and a good research would be highly cited anyway. And of course, some people think that they want to support the open access, and this is the method in which they want to publish it. So there is a lot of choices or push while people choose open access. Now, this slide is a little bit busy, but it actually, we put together a little information of that. We use it for ourselves to understand how the open access is actually understood around the world. And these are policies on open access. They mainly come from Europe. Then we have North America and Canada, as well as Latin America, Africa, and Asia Pacific. The largest push for open access comes actually from the Northern Hemisphere. So this is a push for gold open access. And that mainly comes from the Wellcome Trust in the UK and the Research Council UK, as well as from the Netherlands. Yeah. But from America, we also have the Belinda and Bill Gates Foundation that are pushing for the gold open access. And they are actually funding authors. So check them out. In Asia and Africa, as well as Latin America, it seemed to be preferred the green option for authors. They seem to publish and deposit their articles just within the institutions or libraries. So that was sort of my finding and my take and my information to you of what I usually look at in terms of the policies around the world. Now, this slide here actually shows a survey done by the Nature Authors Insight in 2015. I have mentioned to you earlier that there was actually no proof that citation drives people or suggests for people to publish in open access. And this survey is actually a proof of that. Open access, the option of publishing in open access actually just comes forth from the bottom. The top that an author considers when publishing an article is actually the reputation of the journal, then the relevance in the discipline. Even reputation of the publisher comes much, much higher than the option of publishing in open access. So this is slide for SDM, but slide for HSS is actually no different. It's exactly the same at the last bottom point, the open access option of publishing. And here is just a quick slide to show you the growth of open access papers between 2014 and 15. In 2014, we had about 190 journals. Now we have over 300. So of course, this rise is relevant to that as well. But there is a definite increase. So open access and OUP. How many hybrid titles do we publish? How many there are full? What's the embargo period for SDM? And what's the embargo period for HSS? So we have 297 hybrid open journal articles, and that includes 36 fully open. We launched the initiative of open access in July 2005, as soon as we started actually publishing journals online. We have published over 6,000 articles in 2015, so this is just 6% of our overall publishing. And all open access content is deposited in PubMed Central. And this is a list of the journals. Actually, when you receive the presentations, these are hyperactive links, so you can go straight into the journal. So, what disciplines see the most open access uptake? We have looked, this is just an Oxford slide, and we have looked at just the hybrid journal. So this excludes the 36 full open. So life sciences seems to be topping up the chart here, followed then by medicine. But in total, when you look at the darkest line, it is just stays in the last few years just around 6%. Pricing and charges. Why are article processing charges, the APCs, not the same? And how does the OUP account for open access uptake when calculating subscription prices? So we are looking at a vast number of factors. So the APCs are set at a journal level. So this is why there are differences in APCs between the journals. That's the first thing that you will see. There are also prepayment accounts. There are also developing countries discount. There are some other type of waivers. There is the variation of all the licenses that I have mentioned to you that would carry different APC charges, and so on. And in terms of the discount policy, we apply the discount to a subscription since the moment that we have actually started printing open access. And this discount is actually based on the percentage of open access pages in the journal. We actually manually count the pages to create the prices and offset them. So, for example, based on the last completed year, this is how we calculate it. So for 2017, prices are based on the 2015 uptake of open access articles. And then, of course, we are reducing it by the percentage. That we also add a little modifier. This is sort of looking just at 80% of the uptake to actually take into consideration that the data is always year older, so we want to make sure that the going up and going down of the prices of the journals are actually calculated correctly. And current offsetting models. So we are offsetting it by discounted APCs for universities as well. We create vouchers for APCs for libraries. We have a sliding scale where we offset APCs or offset subscriptions, and then collective open access subscription spend and free APCs. So there are loads of options for also libraries. Now, so in summary, the open access landscape continues to evolve, and with new policies from governments or from non-governmental organizations, this is an increasing burden of compliance for researchers, librarians, and administrators. So OUP continues to monitor the developments and adjust the policies to best meet the needs of our authors. And this is just a quick link to, so you have the information of how to download, let's say, the MARC records for open access journals. And thank you very much. I think I'm out of time. So no questions.
I just have a couple of comments to maybe to inform the Oxford University Press open access work. You said that you talked about fully open access journals,
yes.
And you said that most often gold open access is associated with paying APCs, right?
Yes.
Yeah. To some extent, you are right. As a matter of fact, the majority of the journals in the DOAJ do not charge APCs. So it's 60% that do not charge. However, the number of papers published by those open access publishers, 70% or so are with APCs because there's a mismatch between. Yeah. Another thing you mentioned, I think it's important to know that. I think you said something like there's no real evidence that open access generates more citations.
Yes, that we kind of haven't seen a measure that we have sort of normally look at showing that this is a proof that open access actually increases citation.
So we can deliver reports by really proving that by institute citation advantage per classification. Of course, there's a citation.
But of course, I'm only talking from the point of view of Oxford University Press, so we have not seen.
But you could go to the Spark Europe website. We have collected data about 70 studies, and the overall majority shows that there is actually a citation advantage. Whether you publish in an open access journal or you make green open access. So there is evidence. And finally, you said that the dominant model in Latin America is green. I think we have to say that, although I said open access was invented here in Budapest 14 and a half years ago, they have practiced that in Latin America for decades. Because in Latin America, contrary to here in Western Europe and North America, they consider dissemination of research as part of the research, which we do not do here. So they have practiced to support the dissemination of research by
through the deposition, depositories.
No, primarily through aggregation of open access journals, Cielo, Redalic, and others. So, but you're right to the extent that the green open access is growing as well in Latin America, but fully open access journals has been a thing for decades.
Yeah. Of course, open access is a really vast and very difficult, I suppose, subject. So trying to put it in few words, how we are seeing it from the Oxford end, I think it was the easiest way. But I just want to make just a quick comment on the gold. I did have mentioned that this often involves payment, just to make sure that we know that it isn't always, because there is not always a payment to, let's say, a publisher, because there are loads of stakeholders involved. And this slide that I have actually used here, we have went to an external source. We actually looked at Elsevier data related to the open access mandates and the policies. So, and this is kind of, in a way.
Well, maybe publishers need to be better informed.
Well, I mean, but who do we go to? There isn't a one body that does publish. So it is. So I will actually say that the focus on green open access, this is how we see in Latin America, isn't an incorrect interpretation, because that kind of happened. But thank you very much for your comments.